Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, welcome. We are live here on Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Trainer, Inspirational Speaker, and Author, Sean Douglas. Welcome to all our listeners who are listening from around the world. This show was heard in 23 countries, so thank you to those who are listening worldwide. We appreciate your support, and if anything in the show resonates with you or something stands out, let us know in the comments, and you can go to iTunes and Stitcher, where the show will be uploaded here in a couple days. And leave us a comment, leave a rating, get a hold of our guests. We are pretty able bodies to get a hold of. So Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. We tell the story of why we are doing what we're doing and how we help transform others. We are live every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern and on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. On the show, we have impactful and amazing guests that are doing some amazing things in the world. If you have a question for any of these guests, this is a live show here on Blog Talk Radio is where the show is hosted. And it's a live show, so you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, that number is 657-383-1109. You can bring all your legitimate questions and for myself or any of the guests. And today, my guest is very, very unique and amazing. And I've watched all the videos, and I am so pumped to introduce you to Dan Meyer. What is up, buddy?
Hey, Sean. Good to be here.
Man, I watched the America's Got Talent video, and I'm like, that's got to hurt. Like, that is unbelievably got to not feel great.
it does to some degree, but and we'll get around to that America's Got Talent video, because that was a special unexpected surprise. They called me the day before and flew me out there to do that. So we'll talk about that in a little bit.
That's awesome. Yeah, man, we'll get right into that later on in the show. So for right now, got some questions for our audience. Have you ever wanted to face your fears, become a superhero, and do the impossible? As humans, we're hardwired to fear what scares us, to freeze, flee, or fight in the face of danger. But can we conquer our fears and even use them to help us do the impossible? Dan Meyer believes that no matter how extreme our fears or how wild our dreams, we can each overcome our fears and use them to become superheroes, to do the impossible, and even change the world. In his TED Talks and shows around the world, Dan Meyer takes the audience on his journey from extreme fears to extreme feats, wimp to world record holder, and loser to the Nobel Prize winner, and quitter to finalist on America's Got Talent. Today, Dan explains how he overcame childhood of extreme fears, social anxiety disorder, and bullying to perform superhuman feats, win the Nobel Prize in Medicine at Harvard, become a finalist on America's Got Talent, and 40 times world record holder and world's leading expert in one of the world's oldest and most dangerous arts, sword swallowing, and passionate about inspiring people to do the impossible in their lives. In this interview, Dan will reveal the secrets behind the science in the ancient art of sword swallowing, and he describes his quest to conquer fear, failure, and the boundaries of the human body to perform superhuman feats, do the impossible, and change the world. Dan will share his secrets for doing the impossible, show you how you can cut through fear and do the impossible in your life. There's a ton of links in the show notes, cuttingedgeentertainment.com, the Twitters, the Instagram, LinkedIn. You can look at the TEDx talk. You can watch the America's Got Talent video right there. It's all in the show notes. So, dude, are you ready to get started? I am super pumped to get started.
I don't know if we're going to have time to get through it all, but sure, let's go. I'm looking forward to it.
So the first question every guest is asked on this show, I think is the best question you could ever ask somebody, the most important question that you have to wake up to every day and ask yourself, why? Why did you decide to do what you do now?
I honestly get asked two questions every place I go all over the world, and it doesn't matter what country I'm in. They always ask, how do you do it? What's the secrets for sword throwing? And that's the number two most common question, but the number one is why? Why do you do it? Everybody wonders, you know, what idiot is going to stick a sharp sword down his throat and why? And they're usually kind of surprised when the answer comes. A lot of people say, oh, did you grow up in the circus? Was your dad a lion tamer or acrobat or something? I'm like, no, not at all. My dad was an insurance salesman. My mom was a nurse. I grew up in a small town in Indiana, a little tiny town called Michigan City, Indiana, by Lake Michigan, by Chicago. And I grew up with extreme fears, obviously, just totally the opposite end of the spectrum. I had fear of heights and fear of dark and fear of spiders and snakes and fear of water and sharks and fear of doctors and nurses and dentists and needles and drills and sharp objects, just mostly a fear of people of speaking to people. And because I had fears, the bullies would tease me and beat me up. I suffered from low self-esteem, inferiority complex, fear of failure and rejection, and something we didn't even know you could sign up for back then, something called social anxiety disorder. And the bullies knew that. And when the teacher would call me up in front of the class, I would stand there and I couldn't even read a poem or answer a question. I would just start to tremble and shake and my whole body would freeze. My mind would go blank, just like a deer in the headlights. And I would just start to cry. And because of that, the boys would tease me and beat me up and they wouldn't let me play in any of their sports games. The only game they would let me play in was dodgeball. And I was not a good dodger at all. And the boys would call my name. And, you know, I was just a scared, shy, skinny, wimpy kid, just toothpick arms, just skinny, scrawny little kid. And they would call my name, and I'd look up because somebody had actually called my name, you know. And I'd look up, and I'd see all these pink dodgeballs hurtling at my face at supersonic speed. I mean, just zipping right at me and getting huge. And all of a sudden, bam, 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 you know, they'd just – smacked me in the face. And I remember many, many days walking home from school. I went to a school called St. Paul Lutheran School, and I'd walk down Franklin Street all the way home, and my face was red and stinging. My ears were red and ringing. My eyes were burning with tears, and their words were burning in my ears. And anybody who says, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt, it's a lie. Words can cut. They can cut like a knife. They can pierce deep, you know, and they can make wounds that are so deep that they can't be seen. So I grew up with a lot of fears. Really, that's the main reason, half of the reason. The other half was when I would get home, I'd escape to Superman comics. I had dreams, and I dreamed I wanted to be a superhero like Superman. And I wanted to fly around the world doing superhuman feats and saving lives. And I wanted to, you know, fight for truth and justice and the American way and all that. And so I'd read Superman comics and I dreamed I wanted to be like Superman or Batman or Spider-Man. And then I would read Guinness Book of World Records and Ripley's Believe It or Not. And I saw real people doing real incredible feats. And my biggest superhero in my life, my biggest influence was my dad. And my dad said, you can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want to do. And I knew at that point what I wanted to be. I wanted to be awesome. I wanted to do something the other kids could not do. I wanted to do real magic, do feats the other kids could not do. I wanted to find my purpose and my calling. I wanted to know that my life had meaning. I wanted to do something really remarkable with my life and somehow change the world and prove the impossible was not impossible. So that was probably the first 12, 13, 14, 15 years of my life was extreme fears and yet a desire to want to do stuff that the bullies could not do and that other people said I would not ever be able to do. So that's really – that was my why, at least up until I was about 15 or actually until I was about 20. So I don't know if that explains the first part
of
it.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
That's good.
When I got to the age of 20 – I had gone to college at Waldorf College out in Forest City, Iowa, and then I went over to India as a short-term missionary with Lutheran Youth Encounter. And when I was in India, my life just totally kind of got changed around. And it was the week before my 21st birthday. And we were in South India in Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu at the time. And we were a place called Thiruvannamalai. And my best buddy, my team leader, Greg, said to me, do you have Thromes, Daniel? And I said, Thromes? What are Thromes? And he spelled it out for me, Thromes. And he said, Thromes are like thriving on goals and dreams. It's like a bucket list. They're like major life goals. If you could do anything you want to do, be anyone you want to be, go anywhere you wanted to go, you know, where would you go? What would you do? Who would you be? And I said, no, man, I can't do that. I'm too scared. I got too many fears. And that night, it was 105 degrees out. We had no electricity in Thiruvannamalai. And so I took my little rice mat up to the roof of the bungalow and stretched out under the stars to watch the bats dive bomb for mosquitoes. And all I could think about was Thrones and dreams and goals and those bullies with the dodgeballs. And it wasn't till a few hours later I woke up and my entire body was sopping wet. I was convulsing. My teeth were chattering. My brain was burning up with 105 degree malaria fever. And for the next week, I was in and out of consciousness on my deathbed, fighting for my life. And whenever I was conscious, when I would come to, all I could think about was what Greg had said, you know, what are your thrones? If you could do anything you wanted to do, what would you want to do? And this was the week before my 21st birthday. And I thought, man, if I survive till my 21st birthday, what is it that I want to do? That just was burning through my head. It got burned in there with the malaria. Finally, on the night before my 21st birthday, in a moment of clarity, the fever broke. And I came to a little realization. And I realized that little mosquito that had bitten me, and it was 10 days before that in a place called Thiruvannamalai, that little mosquito that weighed only 5 micrograms, less than a grain of salt, if that little mosquito could take out a 180-pound kid, then I realized that mosquito was like my kryptonite, you know, that took me down. And then I realized, no, it's not the mosquito. It's even smaller than the mosquito. It's the little parasite that lives inside the mosquito, and it's called Plasmodium falciparum. That little mosquito killed, at that time, 1 million people a year. I mean, it was really deadly. And then I realized, you know what? It's even smaller than that. But to me, it seems so much greater. I realized that fear was my kryptonite, my parasite that had crippled and paralyzed me my entire life, the first 20 years of my life. And I prayed a little prayer that night, and I said, God, I don't want to die, but if you let me make it to my 21st birthday, I will not let fear rule my life any longer. I'm going to put my fear to death. I want to take on risks and challenges. I want to find my purpose and calling, know that my life has meaning, do something really remarkable with my life, and somehow change the world. I want to prove the impossible is not impossible. So I won't tell you if I survived until my 21st birthday or not. I'll let you figure that out for yourself. But that night I made my list of my first 10 thrones. And thrones are like bucket list kind of thing. And I thought, man, if I can survive this, what do I want to do? And I thought, okay, I want to visit the 7 wonders of the world. I want to visit all the major continents, learn a bunch of languages, live on a ship in the ocean, live on a deserted island, live with a tribe of Indians in the Amazon, work with a circus, work in the music business in Nashville, climb to the top of the highest mountain in Sweden, see Mount Everest at sunrise, and jump out of an airplane. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to do any of that. And little by little, that night was my turning point. When I came so close to death, that really became the beginning of my life, because I realized everybody dies, but not everyone really lives. You know, kind of at this point that, you know, everyone dies, but if that's the point where you can actually live. So I set those thrones, and I came back from India, and I got the opportunity to move to the Bahamas, and I lived in a little deserted island, 1 mile long by 1/3 mile wide, called Little Stirrup Key in the Berry Islands. And I lived there off and on for about 7 years, from 1979 to about 87. 2 years of that on a cruise ship as a scuba instructor. And during that time, it was kind of my wilderness period, where I was just by myself. I was the only inhabitant on the island, lived in a thatch hut, wore a loincloth, speared sharks and stingrays, ate coconuts and lemons, and lobster and whatever I could spear. And just, it was kind of my wilderness period of kind of my finding myself and kind of developing a confidence in who I was and who God had made me. And after that, I lived on the ship for 2 years, and from there moved to Mexico, Cancun, and then explored the pyramids in the Yucatan Peninsula, and then eventually moved to Ecuador, lived with a tribe of Indians in the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador, and moved to Nashville, worked in the music business in Nashville for many years in copyright licensing with CSAC. And from there, I got the opportunity to move to Sweden, and I worked in the music business in Stockholm, Sweden, with a copyright licensing organization there called STIM. And from Stockholm, my buddy and I got to go all the way up above the Arctic Circle and to climb to the top of the highest mountain in Sweden called Mount Kebnekaise. And that was like another throne, check it off. And every time I would check one of these thrones off of my list, I would add 5 or 10 new thrones onto my list, and my list just kept growing. And now it's a list of thousands of things. But the main lesson that I learned that during all of that is don't focus on your fears. Make your dreams, make your thrones bigger than your fears, and focus on the things that you can go forward to, not look at the stuff that can scare the heck out of you. So I don't know if any of that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my God. There's so much in there. Like, you've lived an amazing life, man. I mean, I've seen what's that show, Survivor Man? Where he
yep,
like lives on an uninhabited island and everything, and I'm just watching what he does, and I'm like, this, like, I could never. I mean, I'm in the military, so I mean, I got a fighting chance, but at the same time, I mean, you're on an island. I mean, let's just be real. Like, you're on an island with you. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the one thing that sucks about me is I'm allergic to shellfish, so I can't eat crab, I can't eat shrimp,
man.
I can't eat clams. I can't, so I'm screwed. You know what I mean? I'm eating plants and bananas. You know.
And there weren't even any bananas. There was turtle grass, and there was, you know, it's just whatever I could scavenge up, you know, kind of thing. And as a matter of fact, I'm a dear friend with Rupert, the guy who won Survivor. He ran for governor of Indiana last year, and he's become a friend of mine. So we all oftentimes will get together and compare notes on, you know, finding lobster and spearing fish and living the survival, you know, the naked and afraid kind of lifestyle kind of thing. So anyhow, that was kind of the slow version of my transformation. But then it really sped up in the 1990s. In 1997, so I had learned during this time, one of my dreams was to work with a circus. And so I'd learned juggling and circus clowning. And I learned to put on clown makeup. I was a circus clown for years and years and years. And I worked with different little circuses, Hoxie Brothers and Carson and Barn, Clay Betty Cole Brothers, all these little circuses that would come through town whenever I could on a weekend. Right. And I learned juggling, unicycle riding, stilt walking, fire eating, and glass eating. When I got the fire eating and glass eating, I said, wow, these are pretty cool. This is like real magic. This is like not tricks. This is the real deal.
Right.
And in 1997, I'd heard about sword swallowing, which had actually, I'd seen it originally when I lived in India. And I met a sword swallower named George the Giant, a friend of mine from Bakersfield, California. And I met him in Nashville, Tennessee. And I said, give me some tips on sword swallowing. He said, I'll give you two tips. Number one, it's extremely dangerous. People have died doing this. Number two, don't try it. And guess what I did? I added it to my list of thrones. I wrote it down. I said, oh, I've got to try that. Yeah. I mean, anything that's impossible, I'm going to try and do it. So I started practicing. I practiced 10 to 12 times a day, every day, for about 4 years, from 1997 to 2001. And I was living in Nashville at the time. I'd practice in my bathroom 3 or 4 times in the morning, 3 or 4 times after work. Before I went to bed, I'd brush my teeth and practice 3 or 4 times, you know. And I calculated all that out. 4 years times 10 to 12 times a day is between 13,000 and 14,000 unsuccessful attempts before I finally got my first sword down my throat on February 12, 2001. And even then, it wasn't pretty, but it took me another 2 years to get consistent at it, to be able to do it, you know, without grimacing and to put a smile on my face. And then I started putting a show together, and it just kind of took off from there. So of all the thrones, and they're probably hundreds or thousands of thrones on my list, of all those thrones, sword swallowing is the one that everybody kind of focuses on. So that's what led me to the the sword's falling. And then it's just from there, then the thrones just keep going. I keep adding crazier and crazier thrones, and it's been kind of fun. So I'm sorry. I've been yakking, but there you go.
No. I could see it. You know, when I was watching, I watched your TEDx. I watched your, your other video, and I just, you thoroughly enjoy what you're doing. It's not gimmicky. It's not like, well, I got something unique and hey, look at me. You know, I mean, this is something that you really are passionate about.
Yep. It's my passion. I realize, you know, when you do something for your work that you're passionate about, it's not work at all. Kind of like Steve Jobs said, you know, it's not really work. This is, most people dread Monday mornings. I look forward to Mondays because I get phone calls and I get opportunities, and it's like, okay, who can I minister to? Who can I inspire? Who can I, you know, speak some hope into their life today, this week? And it's just every day it just continues to grow and grow and grow. I look forward to my job. I mean, I love what I do.
Perfect. That's what I want to hear. Love what you do. So looking back, can you pinpoint, do you know exactly when it was that you said, you know, I'm transforming from the scared, you know, I have all these fears. And can you pinpoint exactly when that shift in your mindset went from flight to fight?
Yeah, it wasn't just overnight. I mean, it started the night before my 21st birthday. So those first 20 years were just pure fear. I was always sick to my stomach, always sick, always wimpy. And then after that, one by one, as I would focus on my dreams, on my thrones, and I wouldn't even worry about the fears. And I'd set a new goal. Okay, I'm going to jump out of an airplane. I want to do this. I want to do that. And as I'd work on those thrones, I'd get excited about them, and it would cause a dopamine rush every time I would check one off my list. And then the list would grow. I'd add five new ones. You know, a few years ago, I went back to India, and I said, okay, I've been to India. Now I want to go to Nepal. I want to see Mount Everest. So I put it on my list, and I checked out plane tickets. It was only $53 from India to Nepal, and I had a buddy up there, stayed with him for a week. We went up and saw Mount Everest. Now my next throne is to go to Tibet and Bhutan and to Mongolia. And, you know, they just kind of constantly, the more that you can check off and get a little bit more confidence under your belt, the more you want to bite off and chew more, you know, kind of thing. So to answer your question, it was the night before my 21st birthday. The second biggest really major change, and it was gradual for those next 20 years, I didn't just suddenly become fearless. And just to be totally honest with you, I still don't like heights. I don't like snakes. You know, there are things I don't like, but now I'm not afraid to try them. I'm not afraid to travel. If you gave me a plane ticket and said, okay, we want you to go to Budapest, or here in a few weeks, I'm going over to Paris. I'm going to do a major, major, major TV show that I'm not at liberty to talk about. You know, I'm pushing the envelope and doing stuff that I'm a little bit afraid of, but I actually look forward to it. And if you give me a plane ticket to Budapest or Shanghai or Mongolia or I don't care, Siberia, it's like, yeah, let's go, man. This is, you know, let's go. Let's do it. So the second transformation was really when I started learning sword swallowing at the age of 40 in 1997. And those 4 years from 40 to 44 was kind of and I won't call it a midlife crisis because it wasn't a crisis, but it was just another plateau, another mountaintop to go after with the sword swallowing. And I had no idea how far it would take me. And now it's taken me around the world to 40 countries. And this is all I do. I've been doing it for about 20 years now, and I just absolutely love it. So
that is,
I don't know. Does that answer your
amazing.
Question?
Amazing. I love it. Like, I'm just picturing, you know, like all of these, because I had the same thing. I have, like, you know, I spent a couple years in England. I've been to Ireland, Wales, Scotland, France, Germany, Italy, like all these countries, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm like, man, how did I get there? What brought me, you know, these opportunities that come? What if I said no? You know, so last year I started living my life by one principle: say yes and just figure it out. You know, whatever happens, you just say yes and figure it out, you know, and it just opens the doors for these opportunities. And it really frames your mindset to be like, I'm open to the possibility, you know what I mean? And being growth minded. because I've learned in the past year, which I dived so deep into the professional and personal development, is that when you stop growing and learning new things, man, you're dying off. You know, it's like spiritual suicide, you know?
Yep.
So I commend you because I commend you for doing everything, because I don't think that that would be something that I would do, because I think I would have my own fears, and it'd take me a lot to get like spiders and like snakes and like all that. It's like, I'm not even playing around, you know what I mean? Like, oh man.
Yep. But you know, what I've learned is so many people have so much fear, and fear is really just an exaggeration of what's in your mind. And if you dwell on the fear, that fear just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And in reality, the fear really isn't that bad. I swam with, I swam with sharks for 7 years on the island, and I got to where I could pet them and swim with them. And they, you know, and yes, there is a chance that they're dangerous. They could bite your fingers off, or, you know, yes, there's a chance, but it's really much, much smaller than our minds build it up to be. And so what I've learned is, don't focus on the fear, because when you focus on the fear, it gets to be so huge in your mind. You think, oh no, it's horrible. That snake's going to bite me, or that shark's going to bite me, or that the plane's going to crash. And in reality, most of the time those things don't happen. And if you're careful, you can just say yes and go do it. Now, when it came time to audition for America's Got Talent, I auditioned back in 2008, they called me for several years, but I went in 2008 and I thought, oh, this isn't going to happen. And all the other sword swallowers say, oh, a sword swallower is not going to make it. Well, I ended up doing like 7 episodes, made it all the way to the finals on America's Got Talent. And it was really pretty credible, incredible. But most people will sit at home and say, oh, I'm never going to do anything on that. So I'm not even going to apply. I'm not even going to try it. And they don't, apply themselves to it, and they don't go for it. I found, most of the time, if you apply yourself and shoot for something, do the research, do the homework, like you said, say yes, and then figure it out along the way, you know, you'd be surprised how far you can really go if you just put your mind to it. So that's what's worked for me all these years.
Yep, exactly. Yep, absolutely. So I got to ask you, kind of a two-part question, right? So what has been the best part about your entire transformation, from the scared to not scared, the living in the island, and then coming around to living the life that you live now? What has been the absolute best part about it?
Well, and that's kind of a loaded question, because there isn't just one best part. I mean, it's really just living
the life.
What are some
things that
stick
out?
A life of, there have been some highlights to it. Yeah. Some of the highlights were making it to the finals on America's Got Talent, you know, way back in 2008, and then getting called back again last year to pull the car with Nick Cannon. And so that was, that was a highlight, doing Stan Lee's Superhumans and swallowing the red hot sword there, heated to 1500 degrees, getting to see Mount Everest at sunrise, swallowing the swords underwater in the tank of sharks and stingrays for Ripley's Believe It or Not, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I knew I had swallowed swords for 7 years, and I had swam with sharks for 7 years. So I knew I could do both of them independently, but I didn't know if I could do both at the same time. And I worked on that. I practiced that in my mind every night for a year. And finally I just got in the water and did it, and it worked. But the really kind of the neat thing for me, the best part, is trying to figure out all the, you know, what I really love the most is I get to inspire people. When I perform, it's not about me. It's not about showing off in the swords. Everybody thinks it is. That's what they come and see. But really, for me, my goal is to inspire people to do the impossible in their lives. And I was trying to figure out, okay, why was I put here on earth? What is my purpose? What is my calling? And I found out the whole reason I was put here on earth was to help other people find theirs. You know, my purpose is to help other people find theirs. And so when I'm doing my shows, I look out at the audience, and they're all looking at me focused on the swords. I'm focused on seeing, okay, what is their purpose? What is their calling? How can I inspire them to go out and do the impossible in their lives? So I get to inspire people to do the impossible things that they've always wanted to do. And for me, that's the most amazing thing in the world. And the best part is trying to figure out all the different ways that I can do it, how I can inspire people. And so for me, I'm just blessed. I get to travel around the world and meet a lot of really, really interesting people all the time, people from Ripley's and Guinness and Survivor and TV shows and everything and all these different countries. But best of all, I get to help these other people do the impossible in their lives. I get to inspire them to do the things that inspire them. And I'm just blessed to be able to do the work that I love to do and that I know I was called to do here. It's my passion. It's what I was put here on earth to do. So
yeah,
now I'm doing it.
I just thought of a question. I wasn't planning on asking this, and it's not a real crazy one, or it's got something to do with the record holders. So my question is there or how do they determine what a sword swallowing record would be? Is it you know, can you swallow X amount at the same time, or is it the longest one? How does that factor in? Because I saw you, you know, in the video, like doing all these different ones, and I'm like, some are long, some are short, some are, you know, like, is there a point where it's like, okay, I just can't fit any more sword in? Like how do they determine what is a record?
Well, back in the 1940s and 50s, the record for the most sword swallowed at one time was 5 swords at once. And there was a guy named Alex Linton who did 5, and then a guy named Captain Don Leslie who did 5. And then eventually there was an albino lady in the 60s and 70s named Lady Sandra, and she swallowed 7 swords at once. And then a guy named Count Desmond swallowed 13 at once in the 1980s. And at that point, Guinness kind of put a stop to it because he kind of got hurt doing that. And they put a stop to it for, I don't know, 13 years, 15 years, something like that, because it was getting to be so dangerous they didn't want somebody to kill themselves. Then they reopened it back up while I was in London, and they weren't taking any more records on sword swallowing for many years. And I was in London back and forth several times doing Ig Nobel tours and speaking at Oxford and Cambridge and different universities, Imperial College and things. And I decided I was going to go to Guinness headquarters and talk to them and ask if I could do a little demonstration. They said, sure. I figured I'd do a 5-minute demonstration during lunch. Well, it went for about an hour and a half, and they videotaped the whole thing. And they said, from now on, you're going to be our adjudicator, our witness, so that when we have sword swallowing records, we're going to kind of run them past you, since you know what you're talking about, since I was the president of the Sword Swallowers Association. And so at that point, they started putting the records back in the book. And the record for multiple swords for sword swallowing got up to 12 and 15 swords, and then 21 by a fellow over in Australia. And then a guy in India did 22 swords. And so two years ago at Ripley's, believe it or not, in St. Augustine, Florida, in 2015, I broke that record, which was 22. I swallowed 29 swords at one time. And these are 24-inch swords, have to be at least 20 inches long by half an inch in width and at least 1 millimeter in thickness. And so these were 24 inches long by half inch by 1 millimeter, and I did the 29 of them back then. So that's one particular type of record. Another record the most individual swords swallowed in 3 minutes. And there was a guy in London who had done it last year, actually up in Manchester, I believe. And he had swallowed 13 swords in 3 minutes. But this past February, I was at Ripley's, believe it or not, in Panama City Beach for World Sword Swallowers Day. And I took on that record to see how many individual swords I could swallow in 3 minutes. And instead of I broke the record, which was 13. I broke it by swallowing 26 swords in 3 minutes. So I doubled the record. And it was not pretty. It was not easy. Your stomach doesn't want the swords in there. It's trying to reject the swords. But I did it. And so that one's submitted to Guinness right now. It's pending approval. It just takes them a long time to approve the record.
Right.
So,
sure.
I don't know if that kind of helped answer
your
question.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was – yeah, half inch and a millimeter. Like, yeah, because I could grab some, like, itty-bitty little puny thin what is that? Fencing. I could grab like a bunch of fencing swords, you know, technically it's a sword, you know what I mean? So,
yep.
So that's why I was like, well, grabbing like big ones or little ones, serrated ones? Like what? I mean,
yep.
Yeah.
The dangerous thing is the smaller the sword is, the more dangerous it is. The tinier ones are the ones that can really puncture you. My favorite swords are a lot thicker, and I love swallowing thicker swords. So,
okay. Perfect. So that brings us to the second part of it, right? What has been the worst part about your journey so far, or what has been the worst part about that transformation period?
One of the hardest things about transformation is actually every time you come to a hurdle, every time you come to a new plateau, is you have to try even harder. And there's always a little bit of fear, that trepidation, like, man, I did 15 swords. Now can I do 16 swords? Now can I do, that's just an easy way of putting it. But, I've been to India many times. Now can I go to Nepal? Now can I go to Bhutan? Now can I, you push your envelope a little bit. And with all fear, it's natural that as you push the envelope, it's a little bit scary. And yet, on the other hand, it's exhilarating to say, oh man, I'm breaking new territory. I'm pushing my own personal boundaries and limits of my human body and trying to do things that I don't know if I can do or not, but let's see if we can do it. So for me, it's the fear of failure. It's the fear of, and as a kid, I was always afraid of failing. I was a failure. I lived like a failure my entire life, the first 20 years. And so it was that huge fear of failure that was always, I couldn't go to school if my pants were too short or if I had a pimple, because I just was afraid I was going to be laughed at.
Right.
And now I've learned, it's not about the short pants or the pimple or if I fail. I'm going to try something in France here in a few weeks that I'm really afraid it's not going to work. I'm going to do something sight unseen that's pretty incredible. And I've done it a couple times before, but, I don't know what kind of props they're going to have. I could fail. But you know what? I'm not worried about it. When I go out on stage, before I go on stage, every time I get down on my knees and I give my fears to God, I give my dreams to God, and I give him my pride. And I say, you know what? If this flops, if it fails, I'm okay with it. I'm all right. I'm not too worried about it. And that gives me a peace and a relaxation. And then I go out and I have fun with it. And it seems to work for me. So I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
it did.
There's always that fear of failure and of pushing the envelope. But I'm not quite so afraid of that anymore. I'm not afraid to get on a plane. I'm not afraid to meet people. I'm not afraid to get on stage anymore. And if the words fail me, if I screw up, I'll just laugh and it'll be fine. I'll go on.
Right. I would think that there would – I mean, the fear is real, though. I mean, you know, with the swords and the fire breathing and like that type of stuff, like, I mean, there's a real danger. I would assume that would not be a place – or a profession or an industry where you'd want to get too overconfident. what I mean?
Like, that's true.
1,000 times. I'm way good. And then something stupid happens. I think they would want to be that mindfulness, antidote there planted in your mind. Yep. Okay, I got to be mindful of what I'm doing and concentrate and really not being too overconfident. Say, oh, I've got this. 28, let's do 29. And just ramming it down your throat.
Yep. No, I have to treat each sword as if it were the first time, or it could be the last time. I mean, every time I swallow a sword, especially my sharper ones, the more dangerous ones, the ones that have cut me in the past, I always take them very slowly, and I have to stop and say, okay, now, I don't, drone out the people that are out there in the audience. Don't focus on them. Focus on my throat, my epiglottis, and where the sword goes and what I have to do, and just really focus on getting the sword down carefully. After I get it out, that's fine. But just between you and me, the sword swallowing is not ever anything I'm worried about. The sword swallowing works fine. I know that's going to get a reaction out of people. They're usually amazed. I'm not worried about the sword swallowing. The hardest part for me is not in swallowing the swords, my strengths. The hardest part for me is wielding my weakness, wallowing in my words, because my words – being a scared, shy, skinny kid that stuttered a lot, I'm afraid I'm going to black out, forget what to say, not say the right thing, not say it properly.
Oh,
and so
I'm all nervous.
All right, Lord, is this going to talk to the people that are in the audience? Is this going to connect with people or not? The sword swallowing always does. That's entertaining. People like that. But my words, are they going to impact people like they really should? Because that's why I'm here. And so for me, that's the thing that I'm the most nervous about, and that I really focus on the most. The sword swallowing, I do focus on it when I'm getting ready to swallow each individual sword or each stunt or feat. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. True fear. You know, I teach resilience skills, and one of the things that we talk about is, you know, facing your fears. And in doing research, I learned that death is number three and public speaking is number one. Like everybody's fear, you know, it's a real fear. People clam up and they freeze. They forget what they're going to say. And a lot of people that I talk to, they're like, man, you practice and you memorize. It's all muscle memory. And, you know, you just go over and over and over again. And even then, you know, even though I practice, I go up there and I say things I didn't think I was going to say. Then I don't say things that I really wanted to say. And I'm like, and I've been speaking since 2009. So, that's a real, I get fear. Like my heart races, my palms are sweaty. My mind is racing, you know, while they're introducing me, I'm like, I'm not freaking, but like internally, I'm like, oh my God, you know? And then I get up on stage and I'm like, hey, you know, and everybody's clapping and laughing. And I'm like, let's do this, you know? And there's that first like 30 second part when you get on stage and you're like, okay, is this working? Is this not working? Okay. And you start to relax as you get the response that you really wanted to get out of the crowd. And you're like, okay, I got this. Okay. And then you just continue on, you know, like you normally do.
Yep.
But if you're not getting the responses in the first like 10, 15 seconds, you are absolutely thrown off. You're like, oh God. Okay. I got a backup plan. So I always have backups. Yep. Like if I don't get the response I want, I'm like, okay, let me try this. And let me try this.
Yep.
And then, definitely.
If you watch the TED Talks, I've been honored, blessed really to do 9 TED Talks on 4 continents so far. And I absolutely love doing them. But the very first one I did was one of the larger TED Talks in Europe in TEDx Maastricht, Netherlands. And I flew in the night before. I got up that morning, had a whole bunch of coffee, was sick to my stomach. My mind was racing. And they called me just after lunch to go out, and I was at 1 o'clock or something. And they had like 12 or 15 speakers. They had invited Hillary Clinton and Melinda Gates. Out of all 12 or 15 speakers, when I got up out there on stage, my knees were shaking. I was trembling. I had been downstairs and got down on my knees and just kind of tried to relax and give everything to God. And I got up there, and if you watch that first TED Talk, you can hear my voice is trembling. It's really shaking. Mm-hmm. My knees were shaking. And the first few seconds, I forgot a few lines that I was going to say, and I stumbled quite a bit, but I finally just kind of just relaxed, and it went fine. And by the end of that talk, I was just totally blown away by the audience's response. They gave me a standing ovation, and it was the only one out of the whole day that anybody had gotten. And that video is going viral right now. It's right up at about 250,000 views now. It's getting about 2,000 views a day kind of thing. So it is. If you watch that one, listen to my voice quiver the first 15, 20, 30 seconds. I was shaking like a leaf. But
wow.
That's my dream.
It works. It's to be a TED speaker, you know, be on a TEDx stage. You know, I've applied. I think I'm up to 6 now, and I've been, you know, denied 6 times. So trying to, you know, reframe some things, and I got some TED books, and I'm learning how to, you know, apply and all that. But yeah, that's my dream. In 3 years, I will be a TEDx speaker. That's been ever since I started speaking. That's been my pinnacle. You know, that's my world record. That's my that's my gold medal.
Well,
I become a TED speaker, that's it. You know.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'm going to challenge you, Sean, and I'm going to challenge your listeners. I'm going to challenge you to make a list of your thrones, of your first 10 thrones or 20 thrones or 100 thrones, and don't do it based on other people, but do it on things that you would like to do in your life. And if doing a TED Talk is one of them, then do it. If you want to write a book, if you want to visit the pyramids of Egypt or the Great Wall of China or Taj Mahal or, you know, Petra Jordan or Chichen Itza or Machu Picchu, you know, put those on your list, and gradually what you find is that as you write them down on your list, as you're in conversation with other people and somebody will mention something that's on your list, you'll go, oh, really? Tell me about that. And they'll say, oh, sure. If you'd like to come, we can invite you. And next thing you know, you got it checked off your list, and you're on to the next one. So I'm going to challenge you, make a list of thrones. If you have any questions, look at my original list. It's a very, very primitive list. But it's called thromes.com, thromes.com. And you can see all the thrones that I've wanted to do. And every few weeks, I add a few new ones to it and check some off. And so I'm going to challenge you. Come up with your first 10, 20 thrones, and then go do them. Go for it.
There you go. That's a great call to action. So let's talk about today. Where are you headed now? What kind of new adventures do you have, businesses, family? I know there's some things that are kind of in the works that you can't really discuss too in depth. But yeah, talk about what kind of things you got coming up.
Okay. Right now I am in Idaho Falls, Idaho. This next week I'm performing at the Teton County Fair in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Actually, that'll be July 27th through 30th. So if you're out in the Wyoming area, come out to Jackson Hole. And then from there, I'm at the Yellowstone Mountain Man Rendezvous. And then from there, I go up to Canada, and I'm doing a huge circus up there, Carnival Luna Blue, up in Brockville, Ontario, someplace between August 6th through the 13th, 14th. Then I come back, I'm doing the Western Idaho State Fair back in Boise, Idaho, from the 17th to the 23rd, and then up to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho for the North Idaho State Fair, from the 23rd to the 27th. Then I fly over on the 28th, fly over to Paris for a few days, and I can't tell you exactly what I'm going to do, but you'll be able to watch for it on
yep.
YouTube and the internet. And when I'll come back from that on the 31st, the next day I start at the Eastern Idaho State Fair in Blackfoot, Idaho for 10 days from September 1st through 9th. And then I've got other stuff, different churches, and I'm doing things for iPro Network in Nashville, Tennessee, October 13th and 14th, different churches, different things. I'm going to be back in India in November, pretty much the month of November, doing CityFest Latur in West India, and CityFest Hyderabad in South India, and Vizag in East India on the coast. And it's just always one thing after another. And
you're busy, man.
Matter of fact, I just got an email this morning from London from a TV show, a major, major TV show. And that could be something that'll be pretty big. You probably won't see it for another 9 months or a year or something, but it's always something, and I absolutely love having the opportunity to inspire people to do the impossible in their lives. So looking forward to
it. Well, you've definitely inspired me, because I'm thinking right now what I'm afraid of and things that I would love to do but really haven't pulled the trigger on because I don't really know about it. But, yeah, I'm definitely – I have a bucket list, that's on there of, like, I want to see this place. I want to see – I don't really have too many do things. I want to, jump out of an airplane. Like, I've already done that. Stuff like that. Like, I don't have too much action stuff. It's just, I'd like to see, Niagara Falls. I mean, I've seen it before, but I'd like to see this, or I'd like to visit. I want to write some more action stuff. Like, I want to learn this or do this or be this or, get in a fight with a kangaroo in Australia,
Yep.
Like
there you
something
go.
Crazy.
That's it.
So as we finish up, would you go back and change anything, or would you do anything different, or are you pretty happy with the way things had transformed and turned out?
Boy, that's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. I think if I were to do anything better, as I would earlier on my thrones, instead of waiting the first 20 years, if I was, 14, 15, 12, I would start doing those thrones. And, a lot of times we're seeing on America's Got Talent, we're seeing 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds that are blowing it out of the water. Don't be afraid. Just go for it. Go for, another thing I would probably do is I'd probably put more money into savings earlier instead of waiting later on in life and start earlier. That's just something I've learned from Dave Ramsey. And I just, I would say the one call to action I would have for your listeners is to, number one, face your fears. Don't be afraid of them. Don't hide from them, but face your fears and actually do whatever you can to cut through them. Then chase your dreams and do whatever you can to pursue them. And then make your list of thrones and then just go do them. Find whatever your sword is and swallow it. Find your purpose, your calling, whatever it is, and follow it. And once you find those things, it just, everything just kind of falls into line. As you know, when you know what you're supposed to be doing, everything else becomes very clear. You don't have to wonder. If you know this is what I'm put here on earth to do, this is what my payoff is, this is what I'm here for, this is what my whole life has been set up for, go do it. Everything else just lines up.
Boom. I love it. Nailed it.
Good.
So I have another question for you, and we'll close. So what was the best resource that you'd found during your journey?
Boy, good question. There aren't many on sword swallowing. I'm working on a book right now. It should be out in the next year called Cutting Through Fear, Doing the Impossible.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. For resources, there have been some good books, especially recently. One of them I've been reading over and over is called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. Absolutely love it. Carmine Gallo has got several good books on doing TED Talks and The Secrets of Storytelling. Just love his stuff. There's one called Essentialism by Jeff McKeon.
McKeon. That one's good. Yep.
It is good. And what he says is when you figure out what that one thing is that you're supposed to do, what your essential thing is, everything else just kind of falls by the, once you have your thrones and you got them all lined up, you're focused on just doing that one essential thing. There's another book I've been reading lately called The One Thing. It's the same thing. Just focus on that one thing that you're supposed to do and everything else will just kind of fall into place. So those are my good ones. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorites.
Love it. Yeah. Oh my God. That was pretty good.
And the biggest one that I read every day is the Bible. And that one gives me all kinds of inspiration to, you know,
oh, there you go.
if you focus on the one thing that you're supposed to be doing, all these other things shall be added unto you. So that's,
yep.
It kind of works
there
for me.
There you go. So this is the moment of the show when we close and we do a shameless plug. You can plug a friend, quote, your websites, Facebook, products, movies, whatever it is that you would want to plug and let people know about. This is your moment. I mean, you've been shining all episode, but this is your time to shine. Shameless plug. Go.
Thank you. If you guys are looking for the stuff that really turns me on are TED Talks, watch as many of those as you can. And by all means, if you enjoy my TED Talk at TEDx Maastricht, called Cutting Through Fear, look that one up and watch it. And if you enjoy it, please share it with your friends. And the follow-up to that one is go to thromes.com, thromes.com. And you can see my original list of thrones. And I challenge you to make your own list of thrones. Go to Cutting Edge Entertainment. That's I-N-N-E-R, entertainment. cuttingedgeentertainment.com, and you can find more videos and contact information there. On Twitter, follow me at halfdan, H-A-L-F as in Frank, D-A-N as in Nancy. It's an old Viking name that means half Danish. So Twitter, halfdan, or Instagram, halfdan5, and I'm on LinkedIn and all the others as well, Facebook and everything, YouTube, follow me on YouTube. But and feel free to contact me if any of you have any questions on doing the impossible, or you'd like to have me come do speak for your church, your youth event, your outreach, your corporate event, medical association, college, school program. You know, give me a call, text me, email me, and I'll be glad to come and inspire your audience to do the impossible in their lives.
I love it. You definitely inspired me because I'm already thinking of things that I can just, you know, cut through fear, like you said, and really, you know, make an impact and all that. You know, I love making moments, you know what I mean? Just being a moment maker, you know, I love that.
Yep.
And that's exactly what you do. Yeah, that is exactly what you do is you are a moment maker. You create unforgettable moments. And I want to thank you so much for your time, for being here. I am humbled, you know, that you're on my show and you are doing extraordinary, amazing things in life and impacting thousands of people. And I want to sincerely thank you for everything that you do and please be safe.
Well, thank you for having me on. You're the one doing it with Life Transformation Radio, and I'm honored just to be here and helping you to change the world in the way that you do it as well. So, thanks for having me on. I'm blessed just to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. And I look forward to, you know, following you, definitely, staying connected. And, if I can ever deliver any kind of value or help you in any way, the answer will always be yes.
Oh, well, thank you. And same for me. Let me know if there's anything I can do to help you or any of your listeners.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the show. Life Transformation Radio listeners, this has been another impactful episode with impactful guests doing impactful things. Join us every Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then on the first and third Fridays at the same time at 5:30 p.m. Eastern. You never know who's going to show up. You never know who we're going to have on here that are doing extraordinary things. And if anything resonated with you, get a hold of Dan Meyer. Look him up on all of the social media links. They're all in the show notes. Leave a review on iTunes. Give a rating and comment anything that you have learned or that stood out to you. I want to close the show with this. Remember to live your brand. Find opportunities every day in life to live out the values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call that living your brand. Find opportunities every day to make an impact, to leave a legacy, to be remembered by what you want to be remembered by. Live out your values, and that truly is living your brand. Thank you for being on Life Transformation Radio. Have a good night.